Welcome to this podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, exploring aspects of our life and witness at this time.
Hello, everyone, and a big welcome to this podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. My name is Rick Hill, and I'm the host of this episode. And for this conversation, we're going to be thinking about the whole area of church recovery and thinking about how congregations can recover in their life and witness as we come back together and begin to resume or think about restarting some core activities in the life of our churches. I'm delighted today to be joined by two different contributors who I'm going to have separate conversations with. So in a minute, you'll hear a conversation that I recently had with author and pastor Carl Vatters. Carl's based in the West Coast of America, but he has been with us in the past as a speaker and a contributor at some PCI conferences. And he has written a book recently called The Church Recovery Guide. And in it are some really helpful principles and practices to help think about really coming out of the pandemic that we've been in. And so Carl's going to share his thoughts on that. And then we're going to hear from PCI's Children's Development Officer, Ruth Bromley, who I spoke to about the whole area of family ministry and children's ministry and how we can be restarting that face-to-face in our congregations. So I think what both of them have shared are really, really helpful to us. And so I would encourage you to please listen, do share it with others in your congregation who it might be helpful for. And if you're not already, we encourage you to subscribe to the podcast so that you can receive future episodes. And we're really excited. We have a really good lineup over the next few weeks and months to help guide you in this time as well. So sit back and enjoy this conversation with Carl, and then later, Ruth. Okay, so I'm joined today by Carl Vatters, who is connecting with us all the way over from the West Coast of the United States of America. Carl, you are so welcome to this podcast. And actually, I think you were over here in Ireland a few years ago when you spoke at some conferences organized by PCI, isn't that right?
I was, yeah. Someday maybe the borders will open up and I'll be able to come back. In the meantime, I'm loving hearing the sound of Ireland in your voice. It just does my heart good. So it's wonderful to have that today anyway.
Thanks. And we appreciate hearing from you. I appreciated your input back then, actually, and your writing since, particularly through some of your blogs and your books. So you're an author, Carl. You're a pastor, too. I guess, how would you introduce yourself to our listeners who might not know of you or have heard you or read you before? What can you tell us about your ministry and who you are?
Yeah, well, my usual introduction when I'm speaking at seminars or webinars now most of the time is, hi, I'm Carl, and I'm a small church pastor. Because for over 30 years, I've been pastoring, and it's been in smaller congregations. I live in Southern California, just 8 miles south of Disneyland. So there's a big population around us. And there are a whole lot of really big, well-known churches around us, too, from Saddleback Church to the original Vineyard, the original Calvary Chapel, these kinds of things around us. So when I came here, it's been almost 30 years ago now, I expected we were pushing to be the next big thing. We were going to get a ton of people in here. After all, there's a huge population base. But we stayed, relatively small during that season. And then long story short, I really found a place where the Lord showed me the small church has a place in His kingdom and that we are a part of that. And that there are a whole lot of people who prefer a congregation in which they can know everybody and their gifts are used better there. And so I started exploring that and celebrating it, and then now finding resources that apply specifically to a smaller context rather than a larger context. Big and small are both great, but the Lord has skilled, gifted, and called me to the smaller congregation.
Okay, and so you've been writing into that kind of field. Although, can you tell us a little bit about maybe the most recent book you've written? So it's called The Church Recovery Guide, which to me is an interesting title. Maybe on the bigger picture first, why do you think we should be seeing this as a season of recovery in our churches?
Yeah, that's a great way to phrase that question. It was a little over a year ago, and I'm not sure about exactly the timing for various countries and so on, but a little over a year ago that basically the world shut down, and it was like turning off a light switch. You know, it was, have you ever seen, this is one of those things that always drives me crazy in movies. Have you ever seen in a movie, they walk into a really, really large warehouse or something and they hit the light switch. And first of all, whenever they hit the light switch, there's this boom when they hit the light switch, which no light switch has ever made that sound. And then you watch it as the lights go off in sequence down the line, toom, 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 as the lights go off, right? And again, no lights have ever made that sound or gone off in that sequence ever in the history of the world. But every movie, that's how you tell them it's a big room, I guess. But it felt like when the lights went off in the world, it felt like that. It felt like this country, now this country, now this country, the lights are going off, right? But coming out is not going to be like flipping the light switch back on again. It's going to be more like going back to physical training after you've been in bed for a year and your limbs have atrophied. And I really think that's what it's going to be for us socially, relationally, financially, spiritually. I think it's going to be this slow crawl out of the cave, and we're going to realize, man, our legs aren't quite working the way they used to work. And it's going to take some physical therapy to get back in shape again. So that's why it's about recovery, because it's going to be this slow process and we're going to have to be patient with ourselves and with each other as we go through that process.
Mm. Yeah, that's really, really helpful actually. And this is going to take time, as you say. So, I mean, you obviously explore this in your book. I'd love to maybe dig into some of the themes of that book with us. So I wonder, could you give us even a few headlines around the key things you address there? What do you consider essential for churches and leaders to be doing in terms of recovery?
Sure. Yeah. I've been in pastoral ministry for over 40 years now. And for that 40 years, most of my training has been in how to unstick a stuck church, how to cause necessary change in a church that hasn't any change in a while, trying to get, you know, people who are too comfortable, a little bit more motivated. So, and now we're in a season where the last thing we need to do is bring more change. We've got plenty of change around. Thank you very much. And so what we've got is kind of a change in the approach that a lot of pastors need to take. Or the way I phrase it in the book is this, and I'm reading it out of my own book because I can't remember what I said sometimes. But the way I phrased it in the book, because I'm a better writer than a speaker sometimes, is this. When times are normal, leaders inspire change. When times are disruptive, leaders provide stability. So we've been living in a season of relative normality for most of my life, even with disruptions. And certainly where you are, you know what disruptive seasons are like. But there's never been an all-around full international disruption like this since World War II. So since then, we've been living in, while it's not been always easy, it's been fairly normal. We kind of know how to live this way. Now this has caused disruption everywhere. And so during times of normalcy, where everybody's kind of used to the way things are, leaders come in and they inspire change. Let's get off out of our normal thinking and let's think of new inspiring ways. But now everybody's disrupted. Everybody's in trauma. And it's our job to help to bring a sense of consistency and steadiness and a stable way through the change. The difference now is we used to have to bring the change. Now the change is happening. So now it's our job to provide a stable way through the change.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, if I can touch then on a couple of aspects then of how we can bring, I don't know, stability or recovery. One is around our program or our programs in churches or general programming in church, and the other is around our people. So maybe first of all, in terms of our program, I mean, there are some who might be listening to this and think recovery just means jumping straight back into doing exactly all the things we've done before. But, you know, what are your thoughts, or how can a church go about reassessing their core activities and then restarting some of their programs as well?
I thank you for asking the question in the nuanced way you asked it, because every nuance you put in there is important, and I won't remember all of them, but I'll come along the same track as that. There is a real temptation to, well, we just turn the lights back on again, and we go back to doing everything we used to do. A couple of challenges with that. First of all, before pandemic even hit, I've been spending the last 8 to 10 years talking with small churches and small church pastors around the world. And one of my primary teaching points to them has been simplify, simplify, simplify. Most churches are overprogrammed, and most smaller congregations are very overprogrammed. We're trying to do too many things, and when we spread ourselves that thin, we don't do any of them particularly well. So whenever I do that, pastors often ask me, well then, okay, how though do I trim back ministries that we've been doing? We're doing these 10, 12, 15 ministries, and they're all so loved, and only half of them are really doing anything good, but I can't imagine going to so-and-so and telling them that we're not doing that ministry anymore. How do we do that? And that's really hard. But here's the deal. Right now, they're not happening anyway, for the most part. Not starting it back up again is way easier than closing it down. So we have an opportunity now to look at it and go, okay, which programs should we start? Which ones are the essentials that we need to start? And which ones can we look at and go, you know what? It turns out we're not really missing that anyway. And maybe we just don't start it back up again. And instead of taking all the energy and time and finances that we've been putting into a program that most people have known really has had its day, let's put that into a program that we know is something that is our strength and that is our calling for right now. So this is a great time to make those assessments. And the way I would phrase the question is this. Look at every program and ask yourself, if you hadn't been doing this program before pandemic, would you want to start it brand new after pandemic? And if the answer to that question is no, then maybe don't restart it. So we need to start making those kinds of assessments. And then when we do, the smaller the church, the fewer things we should be attempting to do, because then we can do them well. And this is a great time then to start thinking really strategically and missionally and asking ourselves, what one or two things can we do really well and that we are really called to do? And let's laser focus all of our time, energy, finances, and relationships in those rather than diffusing our energy over so many different places. The second part of this is if you try to add too many programs too quickly, you got to realize you're dealing with people who have been, we don't even realize the trauma we've been under for the last year or more. And our best workers, our best volunteers are going to jump right in as soon as the programs begin because that's who they are. And they're looking forward to getting back together again. But again, like my earlier analogy, if you have someone who's been a jogger and they haven't used their legs in a year, and you tell them we're going to have a marathon next week, you're going to hurt them because they're going to show up for that marathon because in their head, they can still run that marathon. But we need to guard the strength and guard the spirits and guard the health of all of our congregation members, but especially coming back, watch out for our best volunteers because they are the ones who are most likely to burn themselves out. So I think we as church leaders need to guard our other leaders real quickly just to be sure that we don't push them too far or they don't push themselves too far too quickly unintentionally because they're just so happy to be getting back to normal again.
Okay. So, I mean, if I could pull some of the things out you've said, that's really, really helpful. There's something about assessing what comes first or core or key activities. There's something then about laser focus. And at times we'll be stripping back or not restarting or not rushing to restart anyway. And then there's something about pace, to if it's not pulling the running analogy too far, actually to run in the long term requires setting out at a pace that the people are able to sustain and continue.
Yeah. The pace is huge. I wrote about this, boy, it's been months ago now. It could be 6 to 8 months ago, although time means nothing to us anymore, does it? And what I said was we have to shift from a sprint pace to a marathon pace because when all the lights went out, over a year ago, immediately we shifted into a sprint pace. We've got to do it this way now instead of that way. In our church, we had to buy all of the technical stuff. I'm speaking to you now, over a microphone in a section of my house that did not exist in this manner a year ago because we didn't need to be doing all of these webinars and podcasts and all the distant stuff that we're doing. So we had to go out and very quickly we had to figure out how to do church remotely. So we went into this hyper sprint pace to adapt to the immediate change. And then the temptation was, without realizing it, to stay in sprint mode because there's so many emergencies and so much going on. So I wrote to pastors probably 9 months ago now to say, you got to switch from sprint pace to marathon pace. If you're running a 100-meter sprint, you don't stop for water in the middle of it. But if you're running a marathon, you're going to have water stops all along the way. You may not actually physically stop for them, but you're going to slow down to take on some fluids, right? There are going to be, the pace is just different. And we are in a marathon now. Even if coronavirus ceased existing today and the borders all open tomorrow, we are still years away from being in a place that would be close to, this is normal life now. Because of all of the relearning we've got to do, there's going to be fallout financially and relationally and spiritually that we have yet to foresee. So we've still got a long way to go through this, even after pandemic is over. It's a marathon, so we need to pace ourselves.
I'm smiling because I run marathons, Carl, so I could be tempted. I could be tempted to go down the whole rabbit hole here and keep going with this analogy, but I think we'll take a slight.
Oh, what did I open up? Oh no!
But you've helped us think a little bit about programs, or the program, the core activities of church. Then what about people? Yeah. And I know you have been talking about people too, but how can a church be reconnecting with people again? Perhaps people that we haven't seen, who haven't felt like core over the past year. Even some of them might even be volunteers who serve or who have served. You know, how can we re-engage volunteers as well to even restart some additional programs as well? Just thoughts on
that. When this first happened, our staff actually got together and we told ourselves our goal is to make sure by the time this is over, which at the time we thought would just be a matter of a few weeks or months, by the time this is all over, we don't want anybody in our congregation to say, nobody reached out to me during this. And I think we succeeded in that. But now we are in that position where some are coming back for where we are. We're beginning to open up to the point where many are coming back, maybe even most. But there are still a handful of folks we haven't heard from. So the first thing you want to do is, if you haven't heard from anybody, reach out to them. And not to say, hey, where are you? Or even, hey, would you please come back or whatever? Because there's, even if you're just intending to say we missed you, people who are already feeling guilty for not coming and who are already dealing with all kinds of emotional responses to that are going to interpret that as a guilt trip, even if it is not intended by you. So we need to be careful in our phrasing of things to let people know we love you, we miss you. Is there anything we can do for you is a better question than, hey, when are you going to come back? So for instance, where I live now, the food delivery app has boomed in the last year, probably for a lot of your listeners as well. But it's one thing, though, to get on your phone and have a food delivery app drop food off at your door, which, by the way, is awesome. But even more awesome is when a friend from church calls and says, I'm making dinner tonight, and it's one of those meals where it's easy, just as easy to make double as it is to make single, so I'm going to do that. Could I bring by a meal for you tonight? That is a way of letting people know you love them and you care for them, even if you can't sit down and eat with them because maybe they are at high risk or whatever their reasons are. And they might just be afraid to come out yet. And that's another thing. We can't be putting people down for having a fear. Even if we don't think the fear is legitimate anymore, the fact that they're afraid makes that fear legitimate. And we need to speak to them in that way and let them know, whatever your reasons are, it doesn't matter. We love you. We care for you. And what can we do for you? Can we go get medicines for you? Can we drop by and stand 20 feet away from you while you sit on the porch of your house and I stand on the sidewalk and we just say hi and do a 20-foot long distance prayer for you? Whatever we can do to reach out to people and ask them, what can we do for you? How can we help you? And then they know that's already a, hey, would you like to come back to church invitation? You don't need to say the words. If you add the words, you could be putting an unintended guilt upon them that you don't mean and that they know in normal circumstance isn't there, but these aren't normal circumstances. So we need to be careful about that.
Yeah, thanks, Carl. I mean, you've written lots, or you're writing, to help encourage and equip smaller churches. I'm wondering if there's any of these principles that you explore in this book or that you think we can learn from at a time when, you know, when many of our congregations might initially feel that what they're doing feels smaller than it has been. So even congregation churches that might be large, but it just feels like it's smaller, or it feels more stripped back, it feels simpler. Have you any thoughts in terms of encouragement, equipping principles that you've learned that you could apply to that context too?
Yeah, that's a great way to bring that up as well. First of all, if you've been a large church and you're small now, welcome. The water's warm. Come on in. right now, I really believe it's kind of the small church's moment. But most of the big churches around us, for instance, are not open yet. Most of the small churches are, simply because the larger churches with massive crowds don't have a way to do it safely yet. And the small churches can do it safely much more easily and much more quickly. And so even now at our church, we are having visitors from the larger churches nearby who are saying, you know, we're not going to stay. We do have a home church. We are faithful there, and we want them to be faithful there. We don't want to take anybody from any other church, but they're coming to our church for a little while because we're able to do physical in-person services because we are smaller. And we're finding people who are coming who had never even considered church attendance before because, well, the bars are still closed. The theaters are still closed. The places they would normally go to hang out with their friends aren't open yet, but churches are. And so simply for the physical proximity to other people that they can have some kind of conversation with, they're coming for that. And so we're really leaning into that whole idea of saying, yes, we are a place where you can come, you can hang out with friends, old and new. We want to be here for you. Any way we can help, what can we do for you? And we're providing opportunities for people to reach out to others. So for instance, we have a group near us. They're called Human Options, and they are actually a non-Christian group, but they have three apartment complexes, actually, where they have housing for women and children who are coming out of violent situations with husbands and boyfriends and fathers. And they put them up for anywhere up to a year. And they are the group locally that we help. That's where almost all of our local ministry goes into, is to helping furnish these apartments and bring supplies and back to school supplies and so on for these folks. So we're doing a big pitch on the Saturday before Mother's Day, which is coming up to us, and I know it's past for you.
Nobody panic.
Yeah, no, it happens in May here. But it's coming up. So on the Saturday before that, we're going to go and do a whole refreshment of all of their outdoor facilities at their apartment complex for these women and children who are, you know, just barely getting out of extreme domestic violence situations. And we are going to be bringing with us volunteers who haven't been in our church before, because we're reaching out to the local volunteers and saying, hey, would you like to help in a situation where you can spend your day painting and it will help women and children who have escaped a violent situation? And they come and they say, yes, we would like to do that. We don't care about God. We don't care about the church. But that's something that we'd like to help out with. And guess who they'll be painting right alongside? They'll be painting right alongside our church members. So they will get to get out of the house. They will get to feel good about helping somebody. They will, in fact, help somebody. And they will do so in the company of Christians who love Jesus and are showing the love of Jesus to others. And that we have discovered in the recent years that that's been a much better front door than, hey, come to church on a Sunday morning if they haven't been there before. And I think right now, especially, the needs of our community are more obvious now than ever before. So even people who normally would have been very self-centered, some of them now are coming out of their caves and going, okay, I actually survived pretty well on this, but there's got to be some hurting people around. Maybe I can help. So if we can be the pipeline to help our neighbors care for our neighbors and show the love of Jesus that way, I think there's a real opportunity now for that that maybe has not existed in the same way before.
Yeah, and finding ways to connect people together actually will be attractive to people when mm-hmm. when to some people perhaps when isolation has been the norm. Carl, just maybe one or two more questions and then I'll ask you a question to finish it that we ask everyone who contributes. But you have some thoughts in your book about how we can continue to use digital technology to engage people. Can you share some of those? You know, what do you think this looks like going forward as we re-engage with people, hopefully in person, and we want to do that, but continue to leverage or use digital technology as well?
Yeah. But in our congregation, as in a lot of smaller congregations, we had to learn how to put our services online this past year. We weren't doing it. We'd been thinking about it, you know, like a lot of small churches, but all of a sudden we had to do it. So we're doing it now, and our team is doing it really, really well. So we are continuing to do that, and we will continue to do that. So I think if you started doing online service, don't stop doing it once people start coming back physically again. There are two serious advantages to continuing to do church online. One is for those who cannot come for whatever reason, whether they're still at high risk or they live at a distance or they get sick at some point from anything, or our seniors who are not able to come out. There's all kinds of reasons why people can't physically come out, so we give them that alternative. And secondly, by the time somebody actually walks in the physical front door of your church, they will have visited your church on average 2 to 3 times and watched your church online. And in a lot of places, if you don't exist online, you might as well not exist in person either, because if they can't watch you online first, they're not going to walk in your front door. That is just the way people function now. Obviously, in much smaller towns, some of those are different. Some of those rules are different from the way people interact with each other. But in general, your online presence is your front door. Your physical front door is about the third or fourth impression you're going to make with people, not your first impression anymore. So it's really important to keep it for that. But secondly, and this is especially important for smaller congregations, there's a lot of concern with smaller congregations that you're not doing things technically well. You watch other churches and they've just, you know, they got the moving cameras and they got the boom that comes in over here and right, all of that. And you've got, you know, you've got somebody holding a smartphone on the front pew. But here's the deal. In a smaller congregation, they don't expect the camera to come in sweeping in on a boom. That's not what they expect. If they can see you well and they can hear you well, then you're doing well. In fact, here is, however, the one thing that I would add. Don't just set an iPad, or if you've been able to upgrade to a camera, don't just set it back on the sound booth. Put your camera where you would want your guest to be sitting, so that they feel like they're in the room rather than watching from way behind the back of the room. The pastor should not be this little dot in the screen way on down there. So does that mean it might be in somebody's way? Yes, but then you're going to tell the person, this could be your son, your daughter, your grandson, your granddaughter, your uncle, your aunt, your parent who's watching here. Where would you want them to sit if they visited our church for the first time? Wouldn't we want to give them the best seat in the house? And that's what we're doing. So place it in a spot where people can see you well and hear you well. And then at that point, just let it be. Don't knock yourself out over the technical stuff. If they can see you well, if they can hear you well, and if they can get your message, that's what matters. And then what we need to do, our best foot forward technologically from a small church standpoint is not how well we frame the shot on Sunday morning. It's going to be how we behave when we're on that camera. How are you coming across? How are you saying things? Even simple things like inside jokes on Sunday morning, right? People are watching who don't know the inside joke because they don't know. You're pointing at someone in the audience. Hey, you talked to so-and-so there. And the people online are going, you've just taken them out. You've just removed them from the process because you're telling an inside joke. So after you set it up, be aware there are people watching online and behave appropriately for that situation as well. It's a skill that you have to learn. I've had to learn it. I'm not great at it yet, but I'm getting better at it. But I'm determined to keep getting better at it.
It strikes me, our last point is actually not just for online. It's for newcomers who walk in the building, or it's for people who are new to church community as well.
Yep.
Carl, just in general, church recovery, anything else that you want to flag up to your listeners, encourage your listeners to think about when it comes to this kind of whole idea of emerging out of post-pandemic or in the post-pandemic life as well, and connecting again?
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I would really want to underline here would be this: for pastors and church leaders, everybody you meet right now is under some level of trauma. I actually have a friend who's a neurobiologist and a pastor's wife, which is really two interesting worlds to be living in, right? She's got a doctorate in neurobiology, which is the physical structure of the brain. And so I talked to her and I asked her about trauma. And she said, yes, first of all, everybody you meet right now, normally you're going to meet people in regular places who are in some point of trauma or post-trauma recovery. But she says, right now, you have to assume that literally every single person you're meeting is either in trauma or in post-trauma recovery, because that's just the nature of where we are now. And then she said this, including you. So every one of us is also in a place of either trauma or post-trauma recovery, but church leaders, we tend to be fixers. And so we tend to go around trying to fix everybody else's problems first. And it's the old cliche, you know, of when you're on the airplane, if the masks drop down, put your own mask on first. And mask now means totally different things. It has all kinds of weight to it that it never did before. Or we're talking about, right, the oxygen mask on the plane, put your own on first. So pastors, take a nap. Take a Sabbath. Get rest, guard your own heart, guard your own relationships, guard your own marriage, guard your own family. No matter what you face traumatically at the church, if you can come home to a healthy marriage, family, and home life, that is what is going to give you strength for the journey. If you've got a good, strong, growing relationship with Jesus, that is what is going to give you strength for the journey. So while we're concentrating and we spend so much of our time talking about how to help others, how to bless others, how to move the church forward as we ought to, The fuel for all of that is our own spiritual, mental, emotional, and relational health. So that's what we need to be sure is strong and solid, because otherwise we are going to burn ourselves out and cause all kinds of other damage at the same time.
Absolutely. And I know that many listeners who are church leaders will really appreciate that reminder. Carl, last question. We ask each contributor in this podcast to maybe share something from the Bible that they have found particularly helpful recently. Is there something that's in your heart at the moment?
It's been a while, but it's been over, I can tell you exactly when it's been, 809 days ago. I was doing my regular Bible reading and I came across a verse and I put it up on Twitter and I thought it applies to Twitter, and then I got all kinds of responses. So I put it up the next day and got lots of responses. And so then I started putting it up with a daily counter clock. So as of today, it's day 809. And over the last few months, especially with everybody at home and isolated, but now on social media, we've got all kinds of things flaring up because of our shared emotional trauma and because of our isolation. And so this is the verse that I have put online now on Twitter for 809 days in a row. Don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments, because you know they produce quarrels. 2 Timothy 2:23. So I put that up every single day. And then every single day I need it at some point, because every single day somebody wants to draw me into a foolish or stupid argument. Now, that doesn't mean I never argue, but I won't engage in the foolish and stupid ones because they produce quarrels. They don't produce an answer. And the difference between a good argument and a bad argument is, one, if you engage in it, is there any chance of actually moving the ball forward? Not that you're going to win necessarily. I'm not out to win arguments, but I'm not going to engage in an argument with somebody either online or in person where there's no hope of actually moving the ball forward on this. If I can gain a further understanding by engaging in this conversation, I'll do it. If I can maybe help them come to a further understanding, great. If I can maybe bring peace within this quarrel by engaging in this conversation, I will. But if somebody's just trolling me, or somebody's just venting, or somebody's just trying to create some kind of drama or trauma, I just simply walk away and I'm not going to engage. I don't have the energy for that now, especially. So especially over the last few months when events are kind of triggering me emotionally, and when I know I have to guard my emotions even more, that verse is one that I'm not just posting for others, but I'm posting for myself. So don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments, because you know they produce quarrels. That's from the Apostle Paul to Timothy in 2 Timothy 2:23.
Thanks, Carl. This is our 35th episode, and that's the first time someone's highlighted that. And that's actually a really fresh angle you brought today. So thank you. Carl, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. Maybe just remind us, where can we find your writings, your books? Where can we access that?
Yeah, thanks for asking that, because since I was with you, I actually have a new website now. So everything I do now is at carlvaders.com. So I'm blogging there. We got the books. And in coming up within the next 3 to 4 weeks, hopefully at the most, I'm actually going to be starting a podcast of my own. And it's going to be called Can This Work in a Small Church? So the title of that is self-explanatory. But carlvaders.com is where you'll find everything.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Well, I'm delighted to also be joined in this episode by Ruth Bromley, who is PCI's Children Development Officer. Ruth, this isn't your first time in the podcast, but you're joining us today to offer a specific children's dimension to this conversation about church recovery. I think, Ruth, you've heard our conversation with, or my conversation with Carl. So I'm just wondering, as you were listening to that, what sparked you, maybe what struck you from that conversation, maybe specifically around children's and family ministry?
Yeah, there were a couple of things that really stood out to me whenever I was listening to him. One was about just the need to simplify. He talked a lot about, you know, not just coming back and doing everything that had been done before, but to simplify what was there. And I think that's so important as we think about children's ministry coming back. Just what are the things that we need? We really want to come back, and what are the things that don't? He asked a question, if you were not doing the ministry before the pandemic, would you start it now? And I thought that was a really good question to ask, in terms of all the different things we do in children's ministry and church. Are they the best things to come back? Are there some things that maybe shouldn't? And the other thing he said that really struck me was to watch out for your best volunteers, that the people who are really keen, who are really up for coming back and seeing kids and being involved, are the ones that are likely to burn themselves out, because they've come through so much in the last year, whether it's homeschooling or working at home. And one of the things that Carl said was that we've all gone through trauma, whether you realise or not, and just to come straight back into everything has the chance to burn people out. And we just need to keep an eye on our volunteers.
I mean, that's what you heard from Carl's conversation. What about as you've been maybe over the last few months, year, you know, listening to congregations and sensing what's going on there? What have you been hearing on the ground when it comes to the whole area of maybe particularly the area of restoring ministry to children in our congregations?
Yeah, there's a few things, and probably churches on quite a spectrum of recovery. I've heard some stories, or just people worried and have a bit of fear and uncertainty about what coming back means, and what that'll look like. Maybe a desire to come back, but just feeling overwhelmed by some of the restrictions and how those are going to affect what their children's ministry looks like. And also just a bit of naivety in some cases, maybe, that everything will just come back the way it was before and we'll be able to leave this behind. And then at the other side of that, I've heard a lot of positive things about the summer being crucial, a crucial time to reconnect with children, with families, being able to do things outside, just doing some not really highly programmed things, but meeting in the park, games in the car park, just some of those sort of things. And just that rebuilding is so crucial, but needs to go slowly so that we don't overwhelm people in the midst of everything else. And also the thing that has come to me again and again as I've talked to people is that people, that children and their families are way more important than the programs that we put in place. And actually standing on the doorstep talking to somebody or meeting someone in the park and having a walk round and a chat or throwing a ball around in a car park in church is so much more important than what's the plan for the next year. What are we going to teach them?
So I think we have some ministers, leaders, hopefully leaders who volunteer and serve in our children's ministries listening to this. What key issues do you think those who serve with our children need to think about in this next phase?
The first thing, and we're going to be talking about this in some of the presbytery events that are coming up, we need to make leaders our priority, not to make assumptions that they're all coming back and in the same capacity that they did before. And there needs to be a lot of conversations with leaders just about where they are and how they're feeling. And pastoral conversations with them to get past the I'm fine type answers, to hear what they're really thinking about. Where do they have a capacity to lead? What are they willing to be involved in? How much do they want to give? And then also thinking about potential new leaders in your congregation, because there'll be people who maybe weren't involved in children's ministry before. Maybe they were too young and maybe they just were involved in something else, who now actually see children's ministry as the place where they would like to serve. And there may be potential new leaders within your congregation. And also just bringing leaders together to become a team again. So I think leaders are crucial before we even begin to think necessarily about what we're going to do with children, what we're going to do with families.
I mean, I'm just sitting here listening to you thinking, obviously there's been some horrendous things that have happened in the last year and a lot of things we've lost and would grieve. But have you any thoughts about maybe how the last year has also given us opportunity to develop in how we teach and lead our children? So I'm thinking about what lessons there might have been, you know, learned or, yeah, just developments that have come about, particularly in children's ministry.
there's a couple of things that I think have been really key. One is the role of parents. We've been talking for ages just about how important parents are as the primary disciple makers in the home. And it's been so easy over the last number of years to pass some of that responsibility to church and to children's ministry leaders in church. But for the last year and a half, parents haven't had a lot of that. The church ministries haven't been there. Not in the same way. Anyway, there's been online children's ministry, but kids haven't been in Sunday school, children's church, GBBB, kids clubs. You know, parents have had to step up and teach their children and show their children their faith. And that's been a challenge and an amazing opportunity for parents to do. And I think as we come back into church and back into a little bit more of normal programming, whatever that look like, that we need to not lose the role that parents have taken up more of within the home. And we need to, as a church, we need to encourage parents and support them more as they do that and mould our children's ministry to be much more of a support role in that, in how we help parents. Rachel Turner from Parenting for Faith talks about the family being in the middle with the church putting their arms around them and giving them a hug, and that's the role that they have as they support parents. The other thing that I think we've had a massive opportunity for is to really think about the depth of the teaching that we give to children. It's very easy to teach children a Bible story so that they have this head knowledge of, you know, those big stories of the Bible that we've all learnt as children. But actually, one of the things that I think has become more to the fore with the pandemic is that children need to have a very real faith and a real connection with God. And maybe we need to take more opportunity to think about not just teaching them the knowledge of the Bible, but to teach them a real connection to who God is. Like, what does it really mean to pray to God? What does it mean to follow him every day? To ground their faith in something very real. Because the pandemic has shaken all of us a little bit and changed how we look at the world. And we need to give our children the real solid foundation of what a faith and a proper connected relationship with God is. And I think I would challenge myself as well as other children's ministry leaders to think about what are the foundational principles that we need to help our children understand so that when they walk into school with their friends, they don't just know the story of Jonah, important as that is, but they also understand what it means to go to their Nineveh and tell people about who Jesus is.
I mean, you referred to that there has been children's ministry happening over the last year, obviously online versions, and perhaps some congregations in the last few weeks have been returning to some sort of in-person children's ministry as well, or beginning to recover that as well. Can you maybe share with us any good examples or maybe encouraging stories of children's ministry at this time? So, yeah, highlight good practice to us, give us good examples. I know people listening always love to steal some either ideas or just hear what others are doing for encouragement or for their own development.
Some churches are beginning to reimagine what their children's ministry is going to look like in September in light of everything that has happened. And I think that's really important today, to take a bit of time to think about what's going to start again, what your children's ministry is going to look like. And I think it's important to ask those questions. There's one church, I was talking to the minister a few weeks ago, a church that I have been in their children's ministry pre-pandemic on multiple occasions. Loads of children, very enthusiastic leaders. And I had a conversation with him and he just said, we're really struggling to imagine what our children's ministry looks like now. And I talked him through some of, you know, what it means to, how you set up a room, how you help the leaders to come back together, how you do things like that. And he said that in just having the conversation, he could imagine what a children's ministry looked like with the restrictions that we're currently in. And he sent me a message to say a couple of weeks later to say he'd gone to session, and their session were very up for children's ministry starting again, looking slightly different. And when he announced it in church, he had 8 volunteers who wanted to come and do the children's ministry within 48 hours. And I just thought, you know, for a church that has done online ministry since last March, who were just struggling to reimagine it, just to talk through what it looks like, just allowed them to rethink how they do things. And they are up and running now with in-person children's ministry. I know of other churches where they have set up their room. They've created it to have family bubbles come together and sit. They're using videos to tell the stories. They're making craft packs that are on the tables or on the floor that the kids can take part. One of the things that is hard with children's ministry, with the restrictions we have at the minute, is if leaders are wearing masks and children are sitting apart, that it feels very false. And sometimes weather dependent, obviously, and in our country it can be hard to plan ahead with that. But just to take kids outside and let them make noise, leaders can step back and take their masks off a little bit, and just to allow a bit more movement. I think one of the things that people are finding hard is the restriction on movement within rooms. One of the things that Carl said in the interview before was that he thinks it's the small church's moment. And I actually think restarting children's ministry is probably easier for the small churches. Now, if you're in a small church, you may not think that, but you maybe have less children and you can fit them all in, or you can have them all in your car park and you can reconnect with them in a way that's easier if you're in a church that has loads of kids and loads of families. And I just loved when he said that. I'm not saying it's easy, but I do think it's easier in some ways to start that up and to reconnect with children if you're part of a smaller church. And I want to use that to encourage the smaller churches.
Ruth, you sound hopeful. Are you hopeful?
I am. I am very hopeful. I think I've been talking to some people recently who haven't done any face-to-face children's ministry in the last few months, but I have. I have seen children. I have spent time with them. And, you know, the restrictions and all that we have to put in place to make children's ministry safe at the minute can be a bit overwhelming. But I think partly once you do it once, you realise how it works. But I think the more important thing is that you can't put all this stuff in place, you know, mark out 2 metres for people to sit apart, have all the hand sanitizer, make sure the leaders are masked. That's not children's ministry. That's just the things we have to work with at the minute. Children's ministry is about telling the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord and the power and the wonders he has done, which is a quote from Psalm 78 that we use. And whenever you get in a room with children, no matter whether they're sitting at a bit of a distance and you have to wear a mask, being able to share the gospel with children, helping them learn about what it means to walk in their faith, is so much more important and so much easier to do in person than online. And I just think we need to not forget that that's the point of it. And it's worth putting all these things in place so that we can share our faith with children. So I am hopeful, because I just think children, their hope, their excitement and their love of being together has so much to teach us as well in the church about what it means to be a church family and a church community living through these strange times and hopefully coming out of these strange times.
Yeah, I love that, Ruth. I'm glad you're hopeful. And thanks for just that reminder. Let's not get bogged down in restrictions and logistics. They are important, but they are not they are the means to get us to what we want to do with children in terms of passing on our faith to them. And I suppose I just want to say, you know, I really appreciate all that happens in our congregations with children. We've certainly learned in the last year as a family the benefit of the extra voices and the extra leaders that are in our children's lives. And we've realized our children need that and benefit from other voices and additional voices as well and role models and examples. So yeah, if you're listening and you serve in children's ministry, thank you. We appreciate all that you're doing. Ruth, I'm just thinking, you have a wealth of experience here, lots of stuff going on. I'm struck by that minister, the conversation you had with the minister. How can people get hold of you? How can people track what you're putting out there in terms of children's resources and good practice?
Yeah, one of the ways that you can find out how to get in touch or see some of the stuff that's going on is by looking at the Presbyterian Church website, which is presbyterianireland.org. And there's a page there called Together Again for Children's Ministry. Click through and you'll find things on there, like some resources that you can use and just some thoughts on how to restart your children's ministry and put stuff together. And there's also the PCI Children's Ministry Leaders page, which I put stuff on fairly regularly as well. And then obviously, if you want to get with me directly to have a chat, you can email me at any point. I have the normal Presbyterian Ireland email address, and people are very welcome to email me if they have any specific questions or they just want a quick chat about how to get things started again.
Brilliant. Just to clarify, the Children's Ministry page is on Facebook, is that right?
Yes, it's PCI Children's Ministry on Facebook, yes.
Okay. Ruth, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for adding to the conversation and bringing a kind of children's family element and dimension to it. We really appreciate what you do and appreciate you sharing today. Well, folks, there you have it. A familiar voice to us in Ruth and maybe a fresh voice for us in Carl. But hopefully in both of those conversations, there are things for you to take away, to chew over and to put into practice for your own congregational context where you find yourself. We recognize it's not an easy time to lead, but also these are days of huge opportunity as we think about restarting, reconnecting, regathering, all of those rewards, and particularly recovering in the life of our church. Can I just, in the meantime, before our next episode drops in a couple of weeks' time, refer you to the Refine section of the PCI website for more resources, articles, blogs, podcasts, webinars that are upcoming and that might help to resource you at this time as well. We'll look forward to being back with you in a couple of weeks with another conversation. Until then, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Thanks for joining us.